All right, welcome back everybody to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters and I was born yesterday, and next to me is Mr. Patrick Barrett.
Thank you for having me, Robert.
You're very, very welcome. we were just talking a little bit about the ever-loving topic of linkage and incentive zoning. Where do we stand right now, Mr. Barrett?
I'm not sure where we're standing at all, but I think couple of things. So last night, the city council got into it a little bit. Mark McGovern proposed an amendment that would have adjusted the 30,000 square foot exemption that Councillor Azeem had introduced a few weeks prior and put a cap on that for buildings only 60,000 square feet. So if you're building a building that's 60,000 square feet or less, the first 30,000 square feet would be exempt from the incentive zoning fee. If you're building a building that's 60,000 square feet and 1 foot above, you pay the entire 60,000.
Right. So this is trying to carve out for the sort of more modest scale development.
So what I've been trying to push with these guys is that there is no incentive zoning building really between 30,000 and 150,000 square feet. You've had two buildings that on their list that were 47,000 and change, but those buildings were built at a time that the linkage rate was like $13 and $14, not even close to where it is now. And those are also just labs. And my biggest push throughout all of this, if you only want to build labs, linkage is creating this vacuum. And the more you raise the fee, the more you push other uses out of viability in terms of its financial, really financial viability.
I want to just comment and say that, every once in a while, I think some of the elected officials are actually can be educated, and I have to, speak well of Burhan Azeem here and that he seems to sort of be getting a lot of, at least on this issue, pretty clearly.
Not just Burhan, I think they're all at least open to this notion. Cause I think prior to this conversation, the idea of amending inclusionary was like third rail, can't talk about it. The Affordable Housing Trust rules over all. If any city councilor doesn't vote for this, they'll be seen as being anti-housing or anti-affordable housing and, thousand years of darkness. My goal throughout this entire thing was just to get it on the table and on the record how we're doing this, that the incentive zoning rate, the methodology used for it, looks at a restaurant or looks at a music hall or looks at a movie theater as being more impactful on the cost of housing than all these labs we're building. And to me, that's ridiculous.
But the net effect is that the structure as it is, and it would become even more so if they simply were to jack up the rates, is that it's basically incentivizing a move toward the construction of labs. And, again, some of the counselors then come back, Dennis Carlone and others, and they say, well, we'll just start banning labs. They have more of a command and control mentality about everything. If we're going to do is going to have unintended consequences, we'll simply, raise that.
In Dennis Carlone's defense, that sounds like an attractive option. But what he doesn't realize is that most of Cambridge is already built. I like to say there's lots of land in Cambridge that just happens to be stuff on it. But in order to incentivize the development that's contemplated by things like Envision, C2, K2, all these planning studies we've ever done, we're going to have to incentivize development, whether it be residential housing, but also all the amenities that go along with that, because housing alone isn't enough. We need to also plan for how people live and how they use the city. So when you ban, like in Central Square, they're planning, this is like the crazy part of it all, is like the city council brings forth a lab ban at the same time they're talking about the linkage fee, which is only supported by labs. So there's a real cognitive disconnect on that entire subject. But in terms of last night, they tabled the amendment because there's some discussion now about the second leg of the amendments that Burhan had brought 2 weeks ago that would exempt existing square footage. What I think people are sort of ignoring is that in the zoning right now, existing buildings really aren't going to be incentive zoning projects. There is a line in the ordinance that talks about renovation and substantial reconstruction, but that has to do with structural issues. You really have to be changing the building physically for that to trigger linkage. what we're suggesting is that if I have a 40,000 square foot building that's not net zero, guys, and it uses gas and, you know, ruins the world and blah, 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 and the better result is to build a new building, then I shouldn't be penalized for the existing square footage on that site. Because if I just renovated the building, I'm not paying linkage. But if I knock it down, I am. Right. That makes sense?
That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. So, you know, hope springs eternal. Perhaps our elected officials are sort of learning.
Well, I hope they're learning. Yeah. But, we'll see. But you get like hypotheticals where they say, well, if I had a 1 million square foot building, Robert, I knocked it down, I turned it into a spaceship. Well, that's not going to pay linkage. And you're like, well, one, no such building exists. There's probably a handful of buildings that might even be 100,000 square feet that are existing. But there's a way to handle that too. Put a cap on the exemption, look at it in its totality, actually do a study and figure out how many buildings it's really going to impact. But right now, the result is I can take a 60,000 square foot building, convert it to a lab tomorrow, not pay a dime of linkage.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm fine with that, but it doesn't seem like that's what they intended.
You know, the incentive zoning ordinance, except for the relative the changes in the rates, was something that was crafted 30 years ago, right? And, you know, it's like a lot of ordinances. They need to be revisited and possibly modified and just, you know, rethought about things.
That's also an issue in terms of 2019, because as you remember, 2019, you and I were taller, more handsome, stronger. We could bench press like 400 pounds. And the pandemic came and now we look like this.
I know. And it's road to ruin. That's it.
Yeah. But the council is not contemplating those changes. So like,
well, actually, let me give you this is not related to linkage, but it's sort of analogous in a way. So there was a city council order at the most recent city council meeting, not last night, that was made subject to the charter right, had to do with something which I thought was simple and sensible and modest. It had to do with, there's a little booklet that the city put out about, you know, sort of bike and pedestrian and auto driving safety. Just this, I think it's called something like a street code or something like that.
Yeah, right? That got a little heated.
And it was sort of interesting. I looked at that and I go, well, how much more benign can you be? Like, let's take a look at the information we've given out here about safety and transportation, which was written a good while ago, before we had protected bike lanes, before we had white posts, before we had people going around on these little floating boards and high-speed scooters, you know, hidden behind parked cars.
Give me some Back to the Future vibes there.
Yeah, and also before there were cars that run absolutely silent because they were electric, right? And before there were cell phones in many respects, which actually are as part of distracted driving. So to me, a lot has changed in the last 10 years, if not the last, and certainly the last 20 years. So updating something like that just seems like, well, of course you'd want to do that. But some people said, oh, no, you're unfairly picking on the bikers or whatever. So they had to kind of rewrite it.
I think the kids today call it gaslighting. I think that's what when they're reminded of something that they don't particularly enjoy or find to be problematic to discuss, it becomes a gaslighting thing. Yeah. I don't know what gaslighting is necessarily. I've heard about it, but
reference. It is.
But you know, I think I actually thought it was pretty benign, but again, I think Toner is also trying to be deferential to North Cambridge. I just came back from there. They're still pissed off about bike lanes. Right or wrong, I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just saying that, like, there's it might be good to have a discussion about what the rules of the road are.
Yeah, and my primary point about this is that ordinances, rules of the road, everything needs to be revisited every 10 or so years, just to make sure it's at least consistent with current conditions.
Absolutely.
You know. And that means economic conditions have changed a lot, which is really, the reason why they were creating incentive zoning, that was written during a time when, you know, when people are opening up companies, but they were going back home to live in their suburban home in Lexington, you know,
it was very $4 a foot.
Right. So much was different. So regardless how they ultimately change it, the fact that you should modify these things and give it a good look-see periodically, to me, is just obvious. And, you know, so.
Well, I have to say, regardless of the outcome, I feel accomplished in that at least I got the conversation on the table, because I think people didn't really understand the methodology. I think we just kind of accepted that these are inevitabilities. Yeah. Some person called it a fait accompli, but I think In reality, we've made some progress, and at least over time, when they do their next Nexus study, they can see how badly they screwed it all up.
Right, maybe so. Anyway, I believe it's October 17th or something is the deadline for them. Yeah, I mean, they can always refile if they need to anyway. But
my guess is it'll pass the next round. And
In one form or another, it's going to pass.
Yeah.
And there will be they'll kick it up to the maximum rate. The only question is what sort of exemptions they, and floor minimums and things that they insert into the language. Many of the ideas that I've heard are actually pretty substantial and good. So be it. One thing I speaking of success or potential success, there was one of, as you like to say, the greatest festival in Cambridge happened this past weekend.
The most important event in America, actually.
It really is.
Ribfest in East Cambridge, run by Jason Owls and Patrick McGee, and they did a phenomenal job. The only mistake they made was allowing two Central Square restaurants to enter it, because one Central Square restaurant won it. Viale, way to go, guys.
Viale won?
Oh. Viale won. Central Square restaurant enters. A Central Square restaurant leaves victorious.
All right. Now, I have it on good authority that your particular restaurant was also in there.
My restaurant, The Dial, was there. And though we did not win, we came there. It checked off. People have bucket lists, Robert. And I got to tell you, mine might seem depressing to you people, but like, going to the Ribfest as a competitor has actually been a dream of mine for like 10 years.
Right. Well done, then. Well done.
And I was so proud of my team. They did such a great job. It was super packed. It was such a good event. I ate way too much. And it was everything. They also made the beer garden so it could be out in the whole entire street.
Excellent.
And, it's the kind of event that can make me, even see a guy like Mike Connolly and say, hey, how you doing?
Well, that's a hell of an event then. I think I would need at least five beers to get to that point personally, but that's me. So, all right. So now back to something of some great significance also involving you, Mr. Barrett.
Yes.
Is that in addition to being a newfound political pundit like me, you are also a property owner and property developer who is involved now in a significant project in Central Square
involving be more excited about it, Robert, but I'm sorry to cut you there. Go ahead.
No, and just for everybody for the three or four people who are unaware, it has to do with the site where the Middle East is located.
Yes.
Which is it actually bordered on Brookline Ave. It goes from Mass Ave all the way down to Green Street. It's not a huge site, but it is a prominent site and an important site in terms of the current occupants that are there.
I would argue it's probably the most important site in Central Square.
And the Middle East restaurant there, the whole family's operation there has been one of the great anchors that has carried us through the last several decades of Central Square. It is true. Absolutely true.
So I am the evil, crazy developer that's going to look into redeveloping the Middle East. The plan right now, as it stands, we have a hearing Thursday this week at the Historical Commission to talk about a demolition permit that I filed. The demolition permit is really just to explore the historical nature of the site. I think, from my position, the historical significance comes from what happens inside the building, not necessarily the building itself. And part of my plan is to build not one, not two, but three live music venues, an upstairs, a downstairs, a lobby lounge, Wally's, Lucky's-esque type space on Brookline. We also have a hotel above for 124 rooms with a 6,000 square foot restaurant and event space on the rooftop, sort of mirroring what we achieved over at 907 Main in the Blue Owl.
This is actually pretty interesting, I have to say.
It's going to be a challenging site. It's going to be difficult to do, but part of the plan is, and this is part of my relationship with the Sater family. We've known each other for a very long time. I would not do this in a million years if it didn't mean bringing back the Middle East. The Middle East will come back. It'll be named the Middle East. It'll be run by the Sater family. And the tradition of music in the square will continue on at least for another, well past you and I.
You know, I'm a person who is occasionally, actually more than occasionally, prone to nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know, and I sort of think about the things I like and, you know, the familiar places or whatever. But one of the realizations I came to at some point was that, you know, if you just sort of sit in basking in nostalgia with the expectation that everything you like just continues on forevermore, that's absolute fiction. The truth of the matter is that sometimes you actually have to do an intervention such as the one you are proposing in order to actually preserve some of the things that you like.
The way I've described it to people is I feel like I'm jumping on a live grenade. And I think that, you know, people were upset initially when they heard about the project, like, oh no, the Middle East is going away. I even saw one news article, developer forces family to close music venue. Like, holy shit, that's a great story. Who is that guy? But, you know, if I don't do this, if we don't do something to preserve that use and to build it out and to make it functional for another couple of decades, because Joseph and Nabil are not going to live forever as much as we would like them to. And also, we can't force them to run their business even into retirement. They need to be able to pass the baton to the next of kin. But we need to make sure that those spaces can be financially viable. And I think in the case of the Middle East, currently, we're going to make it, you know, dig it down so it has the proper head heights, proper clearances, ADA accessibility, you know, proper, you know, fire rating, all the things that you need in a modern venue, plus ventilation. Modern ventilation to actually flush the air in and out of the space so it's fresh, so you have proper air cyclings. And then soundproof the bejesus out of it so we can put some hotels on top of that and bring people into the square to become that entertainment district that I know what we are.
Right. No. It's so, you know, again, I'm not going to pass judgment here on this here, but to me, as I was mentioning, the notion that things that you love just stay forever without doing it, because, you know, and I have to say something here, which is the value of having somebody who's connected to the square be the one who's going to be putting the shovels in the dirt.
I'm checking off a lot of boxes, Robert. If Ribfest was like on my bucket list of things to do as a high watermark achievement, this is like a dream beyond my dreams. I never thought in a million years I'd have a chance to do this. I played there as a teenager. I played there as a young adult. The last time I played there was when I was 34 at the WBCN Rock and Roll Rumble.
I've been to a few Rock and Roll Rumbles going back to the late 1970s.
I met my wife at TT the Bears.
There you go.
You know, when I was bartending a few blocks down at the Asgard, I'd go and I'd listen to shows and I'd play in bands. That's how I met a fellow who I played guitar with, which eventually became the band that I met my wife. A lot of pivotal events in my life, as I'm sure many people, took place in that building.
Right. And you know, just to be really, really clear, is that the likelihood, you know, let's say 10 years or less from now, yeah, were there not to be some more creative way to handle a situation like this here, would be the property would change hands eventually, probably be owned by some big real estate holding company who would be funded by pension funds and things like that. And they would basically be going for highest profit.
You know, I'm no saint, Robert. I'm not doing this for free. I'm not doing it because it's, you know, I'm a charity case, but like, tying back into the conversation we just had about linkage, you know, financial viability, the only thing on this site that actually really makes financial sense, the highest and best use, as we call it, would be a lab. And I know lots of people are looking at that. And I think it'd be difficult to do on that site because the people would rise up and destroy them, and I'd help them do that. But it's a single story building. It's next to the T. It's on Mass Ave, you know, and adding, you know, making a six story structure with the things that I'm talking about. You know, you look at 907 Main and people are like, oh, do we need more hotel? I'm at 100% occupancy for the past month and a half. So, and prior to that, it's even, you know, it's been like 80 up and down, but like our rooms are cheaper, they're accessible. And plus, imagine, Robert, you and I, we go see, Guar at the Middle East, and we can drink as much schnapps as we want and go upstairs and fall asleep in a room instead of getting in your VW wagon and, you know, God knows what you want.
I'm sorry, but the VW bus is long gone now. Thank you very much. But the first part of what you described is very attractive.
I think that's the messaging I'm trying to get out. And I think eventually it'll come out more and more and more. Plus, in that third music venue, I'm really trying to convince a woman who I really enjoy and respect, who lost her venue in COVID, to come in and take that over too. And you know, given some financial support from me and from you know, my partners in project, I think we can convince her to do it. But the whole ground floor will be music, the basement will be music, and upstairs on the rooftop, it's an event space. There'll be music there too.
Yeah, you know, there was a time when if somebody took a one-story building in Central Square and proposed making it two stories, there would be outrage, right?
I think I heard a story about someone getting stabbed because there was a Starbucks proposed.
Really? Right. So, but I think we're kind of in a good place right now where that even those of us who don't necessarily want to see 140-foot buildings everywhere, the notion about building, several more stories in the heart of Central Square, close to T, where there's minimal need for parking, is something.
There's a 195 foot building in front of me, Robert.
I know. But, there's not too many people who are around these days who are going to lose their minds over the notion that you have a somewhat larger building there. So that's sort of a good turn of events in my view. I mean, we can have differences of opinions about the appropriateness of big, tall, dense buildings in all throughout the city. But in places like Central Square and much of Harvard Square, or even to some degree in Porter Square, I think this is where you would like that sort of thing to be.
There are some people who want it to stay exactly as it is forever. And for those people, I can't help you. There are also some people who have approached me and said, Patrick, why aren't you building affordable housing above this? And to them, I say, walk me through a Saturday night. I got, punk rock band. I got death metal band. I got, jazz quartet on the first floor in basement. And they all go on at 9. You're going to go live above that at 2 o'clock, at 9 o'clock in the night and put your kids to bed, or, just the mixture of all those uses. It's like you when you bring these projects to the fore, people try to solve all of the world's problems in one building. Like the council tries to really solve all the world's problems in Central Square, yet they can't do anything.
There is a sort of a vaguely described concept of community benefits, or beneficial, what kind of benefits can grow out of development. And for the longest time, it was one, maybe two things that people included in that list. There was certainly affordable housing, I go, okay, fine, great. Provision of open space, that's good too. Though oftentimes the open space that came with projects were sort of restricted open spaces where it was sort of, only because they felt like, well, maybe we'll let you walk through here. Open space.
In our next zoning class, I'll teach you about open space and private open space.
Right. So even the open space hasn't really been too much of the mix in a really healthy sort of way. As part of the K2C2 process, the door cracked open a little bit more, where people started recognizing things like ground floor retail as something that was beneficial to communities, and that doing things like exempting gross floor area for ground floor retail became something that then became integrated into some of the subsequent zoning changes in either Kendall Square and even in Central Square, I believe.
All I can say, Robert, for all my work in Central Square with the bid and everything that I've been doing for the past 15 years, if the Middle East leaves Central Square, to me, it's like game over.
Well, and that's kind of what was my point too, which is that, I think it's time to expand the list of things that we view as benefits for the community. Yeah. And, having things like active music venues or arts-oriented things are things which, if left to ordinary economics, would probably just disappear. Yeah. So it almost becomes required to start to think of those things as community benefits in the same spirit as we think of things like affordable housing or open space or ground floor retail, as things that we want. And if we can find incentives to make sure that those things are either preserved or added or created, I think that's kind of how we have to start thinking. So
my development process, I look at the ground floor retail in every project I've ever done as amenity retail. It's an amenity. I'm not there to jack my tenants. I'm not there to make life untenable for them. They're there to enhance the streetscape. They're there to enhance the livability, like a Toscanini's or a Praline. They're there to serve the community and to be a benefit. And the takeaway there is what I'm doing above those units on the floors 2, 3, 4, and 5. That's what pays the bills.
Yeah.
That ground floor retail in the Middle East, that does not. I'm not going to show you under the hood of my pro forma, but it is not a big number. It shouldn't be. That's the whole point.
But see, that's a mindset. That's a kind of a paradigm shift that needs but the thing is that more property owners around the city need to start rethinking their notion about, you know, where the, you know, how the money comes from.
MIT gets this. MIT does this all the time. They get a lot of crap from everybody, but they actually get it. Some bigger developers, I know guys over at Divco, they get it too. There are developers who get it and understand that when you're building something, you have to build in these elements in order to serve the community. And that if you put tenants in there that are designed to fail, all you're really doing is setting yourself up for long-term disaster.
Right. And as just as a landlord, you know, a triple decker here, there's nothing I like better than people who stick around, you know. Yeah. So I don't want to have to be sort of, you know, vacating an apartment and putting in new people, whatever. You know, if people stick around, that's a good thing.
It's a big responsibility, Robert. Like, just like with 907 Main, I couldn't be the guy who killed Toscanini's. I felt that stupid ice cream weight on my back the entire project. And for this one, to me, this is like do or die. The Middle East must survive. It must come back. And if I can't do that, then exile me to Somerville.
All right. Anyway, I'm going to wish you the best on that.
Thank
one
you.
Here. So we're just about out of time here right now. I said that it does look like the city council will be passing an amendment to eliminate parking in all zones. So that's, keep on lookout. It's coming. So anyway, I think we're just about out of time now. So anyway, thanks again, Patrick. And
thank you.
See you folks soon on Cambridge Inside Out.